So what's stopping you? What's holding you back from wholehearted surrender to the Lord and His purposes? Isn't it about time?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Today is not the day for casual, cozy, feel-good radio. Today's the day to stir hearts. Today's the day to call to action. Today's the day to say, what about you? What about me? Isn't it time that we give ourselves fully to the purposes of God? This is Michael Brown. You're listening to The Line of Fire. And by God's grace, I'm here to serve as your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. You're used to those words. You hear them every day. Some have listened for years and heard them every day for years, or 5 days a week for years. But I'm dead serious about those words. I know many of you are as well. Not a revolution of violence, not a revolution of hatred, not a revolution of anger, not a revolution of intimidation or just protest in the street, but rather a Jesus revolution where we are so radically changed by God that we go out through the gospel and change the world around us. And if the truth be told, most of us would have to admit that we are not giving God our all, that we are not living for Him as if there was real eternity ahead, heaven and hell, that we're not really living for Him as if the things that we do now are going to have a ripple effect in this world and in the world to come. Most of us are not living in the reality that Jesus died for our sins so that we could now live for Him. Most of us have found somewhat of a convenient faith, a convenience store faith. We go in, get what we need, and live our lives. Maybe some of us were really messed up with drugs or drinking, immorality or violence or whatever else it was, or greed or whatever else moved us. And now our lives are turned around and we're serving God and we're married with families or we're single people and we're living basically good lives. But is that the fullness of the gospel? When you read the New Testament, is that what Jesus talked about? If everybody lived the way you lived, if everyone lived the way I live, how would America look? These are honest questions to ask, friends. And we're in another of those critical times in America. What I'm going to do today on the broadcast is read some things to you from years past. I want to comment on some things happening in the world around us as well and give you, I hope, edifying and practical, helpful insights. But I want to read some things I wrote going back to 1989, 1990, 1991. Part of a poem I wrote in 1993. Even go back to some things that I preached. I don't have the actual quotes for it because they weren't written out. 73, 74. I want to give you a context. I want to give you a perspective and hopefully light a holy fire under you. And light a holy fire within you that will cause a greater passion, a greater hunger, a greater determination. Come on. If we were playing professional sports, it would have a certain demand on us. If we were professional musicians in an orchestra, it would have a certain demand on us. If we were fighting in the army or serving in the navy, it would have a certain demand on us. And sometimes employers put major demands on us. And yet, many of us, when it comes to serving God, live in a somewhat casual way and do not give our all to Him. Come on, if you could step into eternity, if you could step into the world to come just for a few minutes and then look back at this world, look back at your life, would you want to live differently? Would you say, man, I can't believe all the years I've wasted with half-hearted living? What are you waiting for? We'll be right back. Prepare to have your hearts stirred today on The Line of Fire.
Change the world. Change the world. Give up.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want to address something very important in the aftermath of the horrific Vegas massacre. Nancy's been talking to me today. She's been glued to the television screen, watching the accounts, watching the stories, the horror of it, the broken families, the broken lives, just beyond comprehension, and the senselessness of all of it. The pain is palpable, and the nation is rocked and reeled, and we should be rocked and reeled for some time to come. We don't just get over this quickly and go on with normal life. We have a tragedy and an atrocity on this level. Unfortunately, a lot of people are politicizing this, and they're weighing in with their own agenda. I'm not even talking about gun control issues, and whatever gun control discussion needs to be had, let it be had. Whatever is best for them, for America, whatever is best for our country, that's what I want, and I think that's what we agree on. But here's what concerns me, and I wrote an article to address it. My article is about a divided America. A divided America cannot stand. And in this article, I quote from Abraham Lincoln. I quote from a famous speech he gave as a senatorial candidate, where he explains, using the words of Jesus from Matthew 12 and Luke 11, that a house divided itself against itself cannot stand. And in America, half slave, half free, cannot stand. Martin Luther King used similar imagery almost 100 years later when he said, darkness cannot drive out darkness, hatred cannot drive out hatred, only light can drive out darkness, only love can drive out hatred. So I make that appeal in my article that a divided America cannot stand. And I say in the article, look, we have our differences. They're hills I'm willing to die on in terms of convictions. But let us listen to each other. Let us not just politicize what is happening around us. Let us constructively have discussions without demonizing each other in the process. All right, so Sean King, who is an activist, and you might call him a social justice warrior, Sean King wrote an article on The Intercept. This was the day after the Vegas shooting, and it's entitled, The White Privilege of the Lone Wolf Shooter. The White Privilege of the Lone Wolf Shooter. And his point was that had the shooter been an immigrant, had the shooter been a Muslim, then the massacre would have quickly been dubbed an act of terror. But because this was a white killer, he's just called the lone wolf, and it's not branded terrorism. King said this, Stephen Paddock, the shooter, like the majority of mass shooters in this country, was a white American. And that simple fact changes absolutely everything about the way this horrible moment gets discussed in the media and the national discourse. Whiteness somehow protects men from being labeled terrorists. Now, I'm not reading this and quoting this to bash this position and politicize it. I'm reading it to explain what we shouldn't be saying and why comments like this are both inaccurate and unhelpful. Then a Muslim writer, Naz Modan, this is just today, October 4th, Naz Modan, she posted an article on CNN with this title, How America Has Silently Accepted the Rage of White Men. Do you get that? How America Has Silently Accepted the Rage of White Men. And she claimed that, quote, mass shootings are a violent epidemic that have been met with fatal passivity for far too long. If mass shootings were perpetrated mostly by brown bodies, this would quickly be reframed and reformed as an immigration issue. If thousands died at the hands of black men, it would be used to excuse police brutality, minimize the Black Lives Matter movement, and exacerbate the raging black man stereotype. If mass shooters identified as Muslim, it would quickly become terrorism and catalyze defense and security expenditures. But this is a white man's problem, and therefore doesn't get categorized, and white people don't get demonized, and it's not considered terror. Again, these comments are as inaccurate as they are unhelpful. So I want to appeal to Sean King, I want to appeal to Naz Modan to reconsider your words and reconsider your approach. And let me lay out a few things that really set the record straight. Number one, Americans are in pain like they were in pain after 9/11. 9/11 even more shocking in a certain way, and of course many, many more casualties. But we were in pain then because lives were lost. Nancy lost her brother, Douglas, in the Twin Towers 9/11. And for days after that, she sat glued to the TV screen, glued, watching the stories of families. In fact, one night she said, "You have to just sit down with me and watch." And you just sit there, you're in agony, watching the stories, the lives torn apart, the mother that never came home, the father that never came home, the kids without parents, and on and on. She's doing the same thing now. She's in front of the TV now. Before I left to do radio today, we sat down and she was just telling me with tears in her eyes about what's happening and the lives torn apart. It doesn't matter who did it. We're in pain right now. That transcends race and ethnicity and sex. I mean, look, the fact of the matter is that there were people helping people. They weren't saying, "Did you vote for Trump? Did you vote for Hillary? Are you Republican? Do you carry a gun? What do you think about immigration?" No, people helping people, strangers helping strangers. This is a time to come together, not to divide, and not to push a political agenda. Second thing, the reason that Stephen Paddock has not been identified as a terrorist is because we have no idea what his motive is. Here's a dictionary definition of terrorism. The unlawful use of violence and intimidation, especially against civilians, in the pursuit of political aims. If, in fact, we find out that Paddock had been radicalized by Muslims, if we find out, say, that he was a neo-Nazi, if he left some note behind with an ideological intent, and this is why he did what he did, then it would be branded an act of terror. Okay? Let's be realistic here. There are all kinds of crimes taking place all the time and all kinds of murders taking place all the time that statistically dwarf what happened here, although the shock and the ugliness of this is beyond description. But we don't brand those other acts terrorism because they're not terrorist acts. If this had been a black man without any ideological or religious connection and some psychopath that snapped, it wouldn't be branded a terrorist act either. So let's understand this. And then thirdly, the claim that the majority of mass shootings are by whites, that's misleading. Let me explain. Newsweek said statistics show that since 1992, the majority of mass shootings, 54%, were committed by white men, according to data from Mother Jones. Black people were the second largest perpetrators of mass shootings based on ethnic background, but only accounted for roughly 16% of the total incidents during the same period. Well, if you realize that whites are about 72% of the population and blacks are about 13% of the population, then it would mean more mass shootings per blacks than per whites. But either way, this is not a matter of terrorism. In point of fact, there are far more blacks killing whites than whites killing blacks, and there are far more blacks killing blacks than any other single statistic. But we don't brand the people terrorists. And we don't make generalizations based on these facts because this is gang-related or drug-related or relation or money-related, whatever, but it's not terrorism. Now, if they had said, if Sean King and Naz Modan had said, look, had the shooter been black or had the shooter been a Muslim, many Americans would have been quick to generalize. But they're not doing that because the shooter's white. Maybe there would have been a point. And maybe we could then come together on that point, because we're a majority white country, so it's natural that you're going to stigmatize minorities and different ones more, just like a white person living in a majority black country or a non-Muslim living in a primarily Muslim country. This just happens normally. It doesn't justify it at all. But had that been their point, then I would stand with them and say, let's work together for justice for all. Let's work together for freedom, for liberty, for equal rights for all. Let's do that. Yes, in a heartbeat. But to write things like this, especially while the blood is still on the ground, and while we're still sorting out who's going to live and who's dying, and families trying to put just one little piece of their lives back together to make it through the next day, this is not the time to be making racially divisive statements and religiously divisive statements. So my purpose in responding is not to be divisive. My purpose in responding is to call for greater responsibility. My purpose in responding is to say, please, watch the rhetoric And please be sensitive to the timing of all of this. And let's ask the question, do our words hurt in a negative, destructive way, or do they heal? I'm all for speaking the truth when it's unpopular. I'm all for hurting in order to heal. But other things can be reckless and destructive. I'm appealing to all sides to step higher. Let us come together and do what we can to help rather than add to the problem, and especially throw fuel on fires that aren't even there.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us today on The Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call if you want to weigh in. We'll get to some calls a little later. 866-348-7884. If you have not yet ordered my book, Saving a Sick America, I really want to encourage you to do so. I wish I could push a button and just download the information in that book into every one of your hearts and minds and get it into the hands of every leader in America. Saving a Sick America, not because you need to know how sick we are, but because it's important that we have hope. It's important that we believe that change can come. It's important that we not always live and work and think with a defeatist mentality, with a hopeless mentality, with the world is coming to an end mentality. So if you don't yet have your copy of Saving a Sick America, it's available in your local bookstores. It's available on Amazon in hardcover or ebook or Audible, so you can listen to it. My son-in-law, Jimmy, listens to books, doesn't read books, so I've got to make sure that he listens to me. No excuses now. He's got to listen because it's out. But I want to go back in time with you, all right? I want to go back in time and share with you a message that I preached. I wish I had it. I really wish I wish I had the audio still. The tape, I believe, has been lost for many years. But I was either 18 or 19, still had a heavy New York accent. And it was kind of a wake-up call. I preached it at a youth meeting at our church. Some of the older people were there as well. It was a Tuesday night service. And it was really kind of a wake-up, shake-up message, a little bit hard in the way I presented it. I was just 18, 19, and still learning certain things. But years back, I found the tape. And again, I wish I had it because you just laugh at the accent part of it. But I found the tape. And it was a call to action. It was a call for us to get involved. But as I listened to the beginning of it, I thought, wow, because I'm getting up saying, you don't have to be a prophet or some visionary to know that America's messed up. That's kind of where I'm starting. And but the accent was heavier. And of course, I was much younger voice then as well. But here's the thing. America has always had problems, all right? We don't want to have this myth of, oh, the wonderful old days and how perfect everything was. At the same time, we're much sicker now than we've been in many, many ways, in terms of morality, in terms of family. In so many ways, we are sicker now, a lack of God consciousness. So for decades, I've been preaching a wake up, shake up message, a wake up the sleeping church message, a message grieved by the wickedness of the world. But pretty much any time in human history, with the rarest of exceptions of times of massive revival in a nation, wherever you put us in history, there's been so much human wickedness and turning away from God, and at the same time, God moving forward. But some of us are so used to things the way they are around us that we forget that we are called to make a difference and that it's time to wake up. So let me read something to you. This is from my 1989 book, The End of the American Gospel Enterprise. And this is from chapter 1, The Backslidden Church of America, the end of the American Gospel Enterprise, 1989. At this very moment, there are more believers living here in the United States than at any time in history. Hundreds of churches boast memberships in the thousands, and dozens of ministries claim to be touching the world. Gospel radio and television shows are aired 24 hours a day, and Christian literature pours off the presses at an unprecedented pace. Believers are neck deep in praise tapes and teaching materials. But something is terribly wrong. Our society is crumbling all around us. Fear of God has all but disappeared. The world sins with apparent impunity, and the people of God say, "We're blessed." Something horrible has taken place. The church has backslidden without even knowing it. Now friends, I'm reading this to you from 1989 to say, if we're backslidden then, how much more compromised and worldly are we now? If we fell asleep in 1989 in the church and woke up today, how shocked would we be with the state of the gospel and the state of many believers and the state of many Christian homes? My point is, it's way past time for us to wake up and go for it, get involved, and give ourselves to the Great Commission. Let me go on. The church is backslidden without even knowing it. Like Sardis, we have become, to quote G.B. Caird, the perfect model of inoffensive Christianity. Friends, this is from 1989. Having a reputation of being alive yet being dead, Revelation 3:1. Like Sardis, we have so come to terms with our pagan environment that we provoke almost no opposition and make virtually no impact. And like Sardis, situated high in a mountain rock, we have felt safe and secure in this world. Why else has persecution ceased? How else do we explain the fact that Americans can sin so much with so little guilt? Unless we have ceased to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world, Matthew 5. Unless we have ceased to be the standard of righteousness for our society. Paul taught, quote, there, where there is no law, there is no transgression. That is lawbreaking, Romans 4. Do the people of the world know they are breaking God's law when we have not lived it out and proclaimed it? Can we accuse them of irreverence when we have shown them nothing to revere? The fact is, we've gotten so fat that we can't even get out the church doors to touch the world. Our contemporary gospel has bred complacency instead of compassion, success instead of sacrifice, prestige instead of prayer. We no longer ask what we can do for him, but rather what he can do for us. Do you see the incredible carnality of it all? We failed to change the world, so the world has changed us. Its methods have become our methods, and we are governed by its mindset. We wear its ungodly fashions, listen to its demonic music, and watch its sensual stars. Its pollution pours into our homes, and our children look anything but holy. When Christian conferences have filled hotels, pay-per-view pornography has skyrocketed. This has happened more than once. Do we think that God no longer sees? The Lord has called us to be holy and set apart from sin just as he is holy. But are we really much different than the unsaved? We have been greedy, covetous, divisive, and slanderous. We have been undisciplined in our spending. Family life has become a burden, and we have made celebrities out of our leaders. Instead of producing self-effacing ministries that exalt the Lord, we have created man-centered, flesh-exalting personality cults. Adultery and sexual sin are everywhere, and so many of us are ruled by bodily lust. Is this the glorious church? We put our treasures in earthly things. Heaven and hell have become figures of speech. There's hardly any brokenness for the lost. Do we really believe people without Jesus are lost forever? How often have we wept for an unsaved family member or friend? And if our stomach is not our God, why so little fasting for a genuine revival and outpouring? Why so little sacrifice here if eternal life is our real goal? Yes, God has promised to revive his people. He has promised to turn our hearts back. But before he encourages, he will cleanse. And before he empowers, he will purify. Revival and restoration are at hand, but before resurrection comes death. We recognize how sick we are. Friends, that was 1989. And we've gotten much sicker. We've had seasons of revival and outpouring since then. But something deeper has to happen now, and it starts with you. It starts with me. My question again, what are you waiting for? Hey, friends, before we go to the break, let me encourage you to stand with us, join with us. Join us on GoFundMe and help us in our video production to reach many more and to do it even better than we've done so far. Every gift means a lot to us. So go there now. GoFundMe.com/AskDrBrownStudio. GoFundMe.com/AskDrBrownStudio. Thanks for your partnership.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Save the nation. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. So glad to have you with me on the air today. 866-34-TRUTH. Shout out to everyone listening on Facebook. Shout out to everyone watching on YouTube. Shout out to everyone listening on all of our great radio stations across the land. Listening on our app, listening on your computer. So glad to have you with us today. I have a question for you. What are you waiting for? Do you have things in your heart you're burning to do for God, but do them tomorrow? You're going to go on that long fast, start tomorrow. You're going to get up early and seek God in prayer tomorrow. You're going to really get disciplined in the Word. You're going to evangelize your neighborhood. You're going to start having prayer meetings with your kids. You're, whatever it is, you're going to take that radical step you know you've needed to take and you haven't taken it. Why not? What's holding you back? What's different now? What's going to make tomorrow any different than the next day? Today is the day for action. Could it be that all of our great plans for tomorrow are excuses for our disobedience today? Could it be that we're waiting for some mythical moment that's never going to happen? Could it be that you live your whole life without ever really going for it? Wouldn't that be tragic? My sister and I were born in New York City. She's 3.5 years older than me. And New York City, you have a lot of street games because you don't have a lot of parks and fields where you can play ball and things like that. So you play things on the stoops of your apartment building or sometimes in the street or on the curbs. And we do a lot of jump rope. So we lived there until, I was six, almost 7 years old when we moved out to Long Island. So my sister, about 10 years old when we moved. And sometimes, many of the girls would do it, but some guys as well. But the girls would do this jump rope thing. And you have one person standing on either side, and you've got the rope going. And then you jump in, and then you just get going, and you keep going as long as you can. And it gets faster and faster, and the really good ones keep going. And the ones that were really good, they did what was called double dutch. Why it was called double dutch, I don't know. But that was with two ropes. Choom, 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 choom. So you really had to be good for that. And my sister, she was pretty good. She'd get in there and she'd do it. And I wasn't, for whatever reason. I mean, I've got good reflexes and rhythm for playing drums, reflexes for playing ping pong, but things that require like whole body reflexes, I've never been that good at. So I try, and instantly, I mean, I'd time it wrong, and the rope would hit my leg. I never got more than once. Really, I don't know if I ever got through once. I just remembered, they always hit me. And I'd watch the others, and they'd get the rhythm. They'd lean back and forth. They'd lean, nah. And then they jump in, and the next thing, okay, they're doing it. So I'd watch them. It's my turn now. I'd watch, and I just, okay, wait, someone else go. And then I'd get back in the line, and okay, someone else go. Friends, that's how some of you are living your entire life. Okay, what's it going to take? The whole nation's being shaken. We're in an urgent, critical time, one of many that we've been in our nation's history. People need Jesus. That's 24/7. The gospel is the answer. That's 24/7. God's put his spirit within us, and we have what a dying, sick world needs here in America and around the world. What's stopping you? What's holding you back? I want to share some things I wrote with you. I think it'd be pretty jarring from 1990, 1991, 1993. But my purpose is not to condemn. My purpose is not to attack. My purpose is to help light a fire under you where you say, all right, now is the time. And you say to God, Lord, here I am with all my faults, blemishes, weaknesses. Use me. I want to make a difference. I want my life to count. Don't consign me to insignificance. I want my life to count in your sight. We'll be right back.
Flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for being part of the broadcast. Friends, if you didn't read my latest article, A Divided America Cannot Stand, you can read that on our website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Go there, friends. In fact, I've written one other to follow that, explaining to Sean King that whiteness is not an excuse for terror. There's a lot of unhelpful rhetoric, and we're doing our best to be constructive, not destructive. Oh, yeah, maybe I'd have more viewers or listeners or readers if I said crazy things and all kinds of unfounded conspiracy theories. Maybe. But who in the world cares about that? The goal is to minister the truth to the maximum number of people, not get the maximum possible response. If that's the case, just go out and be some comedian or something like that, or some provocateur. No, that's not the goal. The goal is to get the maximum number of people to hear the truth, and we're committed to doing that. So there's a lot of inflammatory stuff that we discuss, but we do our best to do it in a redemptive way. Now, I want to come back and charge you, encourage you, strengthen you, challenge you. It's not a day to just sit back for cozy radio. This is revolutionary radio today, not cozy. Let me grab one call first from Petersburg, Virginia. Joshua, you're on the line of fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I just want to thank you for your comments in response to Sean King. I have found myself in conversations several times before where quickly, you know, whoever I'm speaking with, they turn personal. They turn, you know, they want to bring whatever it is that they're feeling, and instead of making their point, they flash out. And I understand it. You know, people are hurting, and they're lashing out, and that's unfortunate. But I want to thank you, and I appreciate your response. And that it was, so an attempt to unify, an attempt to say, yeah, there could be a point there, but hey, let's be careful with our rhetoric. I also wanted to also point out my, you said in reading that reading from 1989, I think.
Yes, sir. End of the American Gospel Enterprise. Yeah.
Right. And you said how it was, there was a line in there about, you know, there cannot be resurrection without death. And I'm a pastor, I've made much of my preaching and theology to make that point. My biggest concern or my biggest fear, though, is what's it going to take for that death to happen in our culture to bring out resurrection. And that's my greatest fear.
Yeah, and Joshua, and thank you for the call and the kind words. Again, it's so easy. Come on, we've all done it. Someone gets nasty to us, we get nasty back. Someone gets aggressive with us, we get aggressive back. Someone insults us, we insult back. It's so easy to do, but we're called to overcome evil with good. So I'm watching, I'm reading left-wing websites and right-wing websites. And the left-wing websites making some outrageous statements after the Vegas massacre. And then the right-wing websites now going after the left-wing with equal venom and attack, and each one feeding into each other's fears and stereotypes. How does that help? How does that help? How about if we say, okay, here's where you said something accurate, here's where you said something very unhelpful. Now let's sit down and talk and understand so we can at least know what the issues are. As for what it's going to take to awaken America, yeah, that is scary. I mean, many thought 9/11 would be the wake-up call, the emergency call. And as is commonly said, we hit the snooze button. The alarm went off, we hit the snooze button. However the act came about, did Satan send it? Was it just the work of his terrorist? Did God allow it to happen for certain purposes? Whatever the discussion is, it was a time that for a few weeks, I mean, canceled NFL football on a Sunday? What? And people flocking to churches and praying, but how long did that last? A week or two? I don't mean canceling the game server, but people flocking to church, a few weeks? So, yeah, I'm not looking and hoping for disaster. I'm hoping for God to stir hearts and make people realize their longing and for Him, their need for Him, their lostness without Him. But we've been in bad shape for a while, and there have been pockets of awakening and revival. But something much larger has to sweep the nation, and that should get us on our faces crying out to God. So in that context, and on the heels of that, let me read to you from my 1991 book, Whatever Happened to the Power of God? Whatever Happened to the Power of God? And this is from the preface, all right? This is from the preface. Here I am writing as a charismatic to other charismatics and saying, what happened to the power of God? And is the charismatic church slain in the spirit or down for the count? And I share some of my own history, crying out to God for revival, for the moving of God. And then I begin to explain that I've seen God move mightily and wonderfully, but so many of the things we expected to see, so many of the miracles, the healings, the things we wanted to see, we only saw a fraction of. Nancy and I, and our hearts broke looking for more. And I say this, in the last few years, I'm writing in 91, some fundamental truths have crystallized in my heart. First, the American church, both charismatic and non-charismatic, is tragically backslidden. It's 1991. Revival is our only hope. This is the theme of the end of the American Gospel Enterprise, published in 1989. Second, the American gospel has departed in many ways from the biblical gospel, producing defective conversions and a defective church. This is the theme of How Saved Are We, published in 1990. Third, to quote Oswald Chambers, if what we have is all the Christianity there is, the thing is a fraud. In fact, if God were to pour out His Spirit in the American church in our present compromised condition, it would be fatal. The Lord does want to move powerfully in our day, but there must be some radical changes first. These are some of the themes dealt with here in this book. So again, I wrote this in 1991. While the American church celebrates, our beloved country sinks into lower and lower depths. We're not only killing unborn babies, but we've begun to kill helpless adults, actually starving them to death. It is claimed that some of them are in a persistent vegetative state. I believe it is the church that is in a persistent vegetative state. Will nothing awaken us from our stupor? Again, friends, I wrote this in 1991. I'm ashamed to think of the fact that Maryland, where my family and I now live, in 91, has just passed the country's most liberal abortion law. I am angered when I recall that New York City, where I was born, recently lit up the Empire State Building in lavender in honor of gay pride. I'm embarrassed when I consider that the Spirit-filled church of which I'm a part has a reputation for carnality, flakiness, and exaggerated hype, a reputation largely deserved. I'm chastened when I read the results of a recent Roper poll indicating that most born-again believers fall into more sin after their conversion than before their conversion. Where is the purity of the gospel? Where are the true disciples? Where is the power of God? There are no easy answers to these questions, but there are answers. May the Lord give us ears to hear. It will be worth it in the end. Oh, for glorious church. Why do I read that to you? I read that to you to say that we have been sleeping in the light for a while. I read that to say that the things that alarmed us in 91 seem commonplace today. And I read that to say that the hour is always urgent. Human wickedness is always great. Our need for God is always great. And I want to ask you honestly, if it disturbs your comfort, so be it. If it rocks you in the midst of complacency, so be it. That's my goal, in fact, to stir you, to awaken you, as Paul writes to the Ephesians in Ephesians 5, awake, you sleeper, and rise from the dead. Messiah will give you light. Or as Jesus says to the church of Sardis in Revelation 3, you have a reputation for being alive, yet you're dead. May God awaken us from our compromise, from our slumber. May God awaken us from our worldliness. Can I ask you some honest questions? What's more important to you, winning the lost or sports? Winning the lost or having money in your bank account, winning the lost or decorating your house, winning the lost or having a pretty outfit to wear? What's more important to you, pleasing God or being accepted by people? I don't mean to condemn, I mean to probe. When's the last time you were burdened to tears for people who didn't know the Lord? And I don't just mean seeing tragic footage after a Vegas massacre or some horror like that, but just the burden we carry for people who don't know God. When's the last time you spent a solid hour in prayer alone with God, undistracted by other things? When's the last time you put down the Bible with God speaking to you in such a way that you were shaking from within or so overflowing with joy that you wanted to leap out of your body? Are you really encountering Him? Friends, I'm telling you, there's more. There's something deeper. There's something greater. It's called following Jesus with all our hearts, all our souls. And if you've fallen a million times, look to the cross, look to the cross, look to the cross. Every sin you've committed has been paid for. It's been paid for. God wants to have mercy on you and bless you. We'll be right back.
Fire we want, for fire we
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Just looking during the break at some of the comments, those watching on YouTube, so glad you're joining in. Hey, I've got a thought that's even radical, crazy thought, which is, the more you can interact with what we're saying on the air, the better I can interact with you in a constructive way. And for those that just come on, you've got a certain agenda and thing you want to push, and go ahead and do it. I just want to say the mockery, like the mocking words and all that, the more you post them, the worse it looks for you, to be honest, especially when rather than constructive interaction, it's just attacks on other people or demeaning kind of comments. So, yeah, unless you cross certain lines, use profanity, or attack others in ugly ways, you're certainly welcome to interact. But I want to challenge those interacting to make the interaction worthwhile, to make the interaction constructive. That's our goal with everything that we say and everything that we do. And if you're enjoying being able to watch our broadcast now, you're watching as they're taking place live on YouTube, but later in the day you're going over to YouTube and catching them. You're listening on Facebook to the feed. These are all things we're only able to do recently because of your help. So if you haven't joined in with our GoFundMe campaign yet, everybody's gift is important. The website GoFundMe.com/AskDrBrownStudio. GoFundMe.com/AskDrBrownStudio. I want to thank you again, every one of you that's given and helped, because what you're doing is you're helping us reach more people. That's what you're doing. You're helping us get more videos, get more materials out to more people. Oh, we got plans. We got a ton of things we want to do to serve you better, to help you go out and change your world, to help you be used by God. We're here to equip you. We're here to strengthen you. We're here to be your voice and to stand together so that we can see America, more and more people turn to God and get right with God and take this message to the nations and to the Jewish people. So thank you for your participation, for your help once more. And just want you to know what you're watching, what you're listening to, your gifts have made that possible. Your gifts have done it. 1993, I was in Virginia Beach. I was staying at the hotel on the campus of Regent University, or in that larger facility there. And I saw some news reports. We were having terrible flooding and lands were being destroyed in America. And we had a series of natural disasters and my heart just broke. And I felt moved to write a poem. I've not published the whole poem. I don't think it's on intranet. And I'm not going to publish it right now. There were certain things that were appropriate for the times. Certain things you say in certain years, you say them differently in other years. And maybe one day I will publish it. But here's how it starts. 1993. America, America, God shed his grace on thee. That's a prayer, right? May God shed his grace on thee. America, America, God shed his grace on thee. Yet you have shed the unborn's blood in the name of liberty. So strong you were, so powerful, so prosperous, and so blessed, you stand today degraded. You are naked and undressed. You export your shame. You sell yourself for every eye to see. But soon you will be called to account. You writhe in agony. Was it worth the AIDS? Was it worth the pain? Was it worth the degradation? Was it worth defiling your sons and daughters for a moment's gratification? You slice up children in the womb and kill the old and weak. You become immune to their cries for help. Yet God hears their spirit shriek. And on it goes. My point is simple. America's been hurting for many years. God's moving all over the country. Many people are coming to faith, but many others are leaving the faith. God's moving in powerful ways, but so much of the church is in a compromised state. I remember, I believe it was 93, my book, It's Time to Rock the Boat, had come out. And I was doing an interview on 700 Club. And the interviewer, a woman, at a certain point said to me, do you think that we're backslidden? Do you think that we're in a backslidden condition? And I said, yes, absolutely. She said, no. I mean us. I mean not just the obvious people away, but kind of the best of us in the Church of America. I said, yeah, that's my point. In other words, when we get revived, we look at what's normal and we think, what is this? Watchman Nee said, by the time the average Christian gets his temperature up to normal, everybody thinks he's got a fever. Leonard Ravenhill said, the church has been subnormal for so long that when it finally becomes normal, everyone thinks it's abnormal. When you serve God just with normal New Testament passion, commitment, dedication, everyone thinks you become a religious fanatic. That's the reality. When your church community serves God in a covenantal way, everyone thinks you've joined a cult. Oh, yeah, there are wrong emphases, and there are cults out there, and there are cult-like manipulative ways that people pull you under themselves, and there are false shepherds who are drawing disciples after themselves. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about following Jesus. Like, if you read the New Testament, it would seem to be normal. That's why I wrote the book. I'm just in a pile here. I'm not going to grab it. How Saved Are We? In 1990, it was to the saved. It was to the believers, saying, how saved are we? And I said the church has fallen asleep in the enemy's lap, and we need not just a great awakening, but a rude awakening. I think we need it even more acutely now. The good news is God is compassionate and gracious and longs to bless and do good. And if we will humble ourselves, he will pour out grace. If we will seek him earnestly, he will respond. If we will go to him with prayer and fasting and repentance of known sin in our own lives, he will come and touch us. If you just say, I don't know where to go, just turn in that direction every day. Just turn every day. Just a little. Turn in that direction every day. If you didn't pray at all, pray 2 minutes. If you read the Bible for 3 verses, read 5. I'm serious. If you never fasted a day in your life, skip breakfast. Take a step and say, God, I'm turning to you. I'm doing what I know how to do. Listen, friends, tomorrow's broadcast, Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, we are going to play for you the one and only interview I ever did with Nabil Qureshi, who's with the Lord now. And look at what he did in the short amount of years he had. Of course, he's left behind a widow. He's left behind a daughter that's going to grow up without her biological father. It's very sad. There's a real loss. And all the others he could have touched, he won't get to touch. But he went for it in the years he had. And I wonder if some of us look at our lives and we're not really going for it. There's a quote. Let's see if I can remember it. I quoted it in How Saved Are We? Methodist preacher W.E. Sangster. How should I feel at the judgment? If multitudes of missed opportunities pass before me in full review and all my excuses turn out to be disguises of my cowardice and pride. What if that was you? What if that was me? So, friends, I don't always get this serious, this heavy on the radio. It's not something you can hear every day, every day, every day, every day. But it's something we need to hear from time to time. A stirring wake-up call, taking inventory in our lives. Can I encourage you to do it? And if you feel undone before God, remember, he's not there to condemn you. He's there to help you. It's the devil who condemns. It's our own minds that condemn. I'm talking about the righteous, the believer. God doesn't condemn us. God convicts us so that we'll draw near to him so that he can bless. Friends, he wants to use your life to shine for him. Don't waste it. Don't waste it on earthly things.